Ghost Hunting in New England,
your favorite spooky podcast. Hello and happy Wednesday. Welcome to this week's episode of Ghost Hunting in New England with your hosts Amelia
and Beth.
And today we are on a getaway adventure. It's vacation month, everyone. And while none of us can really go that far from New England, we thought it'd be the perfect time to hit up some haunted spots in some great vacation areas.
Vacation locations?
Vacation locations. That's much better. See, I was trying to do something clever like that, and I failed. I belly flopped in the pool with that. So, Beth, you usually go on a lot of vacations, but you must be vacation starved right now.
Can we not talk about it? Right. I've had too many vacations canceled, and so this was kind of a little sort of like extra stab in the side about like all the places I could be on vacation. But
you could go.
Not,
you could go to I'm these here. Places.
I could, but I couldn't come back from Rhode Island. I think that I would have to have a COVID test in order to go to Maine. New Hampshire, I think, is pretty loosey-goosey, though, so I could probably, like, travel back and forth between them.
You could. Or I picked out some haunted spots on the Cape and the Islands.
Ooh.
The Cape and the Islands, a great place to vacation, a so-so place to live. So, well, I don't really mean that. We have family down on the Cape.
We do.
And I was very close to them, and I had a great time down in the Cape, in Barnstable County, the Marston's Mills area. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I just feel like people have this idea of Cape Cod, and that's just based off of this tourism industry. When actually,
yeah.
Cape Cod is quite different.
Yes, year-round Cape Cod. Once you get to the Tuesday after Labor Day, it's a completely different place than it was a week before that.
But still quite lovely.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of seafood, which I'm very allergic to, though, so I don't like to vacation down on the Cape. But you know what I really like is P-Town.
Really?
I
and
love
what do you
to
like
P-town.
About P-Town?
One, they have a lot of good vegan options there, so I like going for the cuisine. But also, they have a tremendous amount of art there, and I like looking at art. In fact, one of my favorite photography works was shot mostly in Provincetown, and that's Nan Golden's The Ballad of Sexual Dependency.
Wow, that sounds all sorts of inappropriate.
I'll show it to you sometime. It is.
I think I'm all set. Yeah, the only thing that I really know about Provincetown is that you have to drive a long time to get there.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go down to the one-lane road to get all mm-hmm. the way out to Provincetown. And there's a tall tower there. Because when we were kids, whenever we went anywhere, Mom's idea was to tire us out so we would then sleep. So if there was a tall thing, we climbed it.
Oh.
It's a long drive out to P-Town, no matter where you start from.
Yeah. Last time I was in P-Town, I got my neck pierced.
You got your neck pierced?
Yeah. Do you remember my neck piercing?
Thankfully, no.
I had the back of my neck pierced for a short while, and I realized that that is not a good idea, so I took it out. Okay, so on to the ghost stories. Would you like to go first, Beth?
Sure. I figured I would start at the southern tip of our great New England region here, with Newport, Rhode Island. So I had an interesting time trying to find information about hauntings in Newport, Rhode Island, that there were lots of things that said, ooh, and there are reports of ghosts and there are reports of spirits and there, but I couldn't actually find any of those reports themselves. It was just a lot of stuff that was second, third, and fourth hand information without much detail. So you'll forgive me if I don't have all of the best and most accurate details as you've come to expect from ghost hunting in New England, but I did spend a long time trying to research this and coming up with some interesting information for you anyway. So the first place that I wanted to touch on really quick, believe it or not, I am not going to talk about any of the mansions down on the water. I'm going to talk about a couple of other little places. So the first place that I wanted to talk about is called the Jailhouse Inn. So this is on Marlborough Street, right, which is in pretty much like central Newport. It's about a 10-minute walk from all the stuff that you would want to do. It was built in 1772. It was originally a police station and jail. And so that's where all of the Newport police did their thing from. And anybody who was put in jail was put in jail right there in that little jailhouse. It was not considered like a really secure jail location. It was more a just holding place for people to, you know, if they were put into protective custody, it was a place for them to dry out, or it was a place to just keep them for a short period of time until they moved off to a more formal and secure jail, more like a prison setting. So in 1986, they built a new police station and jail in Newport, and the jailhouse was converted over to an inn. So the first and second floors are pretty much okay. There's not really much spooky going on there. It's when you get up to the third floor, there are a lot of tales of just murders that have happened and apparitions. And again, this is a good example of I could not find any of the actual stories. But there are, I know, right? There are a lot of different things out there that just say there's a lot of, you know, gusts of cold wind that will go through on a hot day. There's the whispering voices. Things fall over. Doors open and close. And so if you wanted to go and stay in Newport, Rhode Island, you might consider staying at the Jailhouse Inn, which is at 13 Marlborough Street.
Interesting.
Yeah,
sounds
that's
like,
really kind
of like very, yeah, classic.
Yeah. Pretty standard ghost stories that there's no like real details, but you know, just enough that maybe you could go and see something on your own. If you happen to be staying in the Jailhouse Inn, you may discover that you're hungry or possibly thirsty and want to head right across the street to the White Horse Tavern, which is a bit more well-known haunted location. It was established in 1673. It's actually the oldest continuously operating restaurant and bar in the United States. It was built in 1652. So again, this is another case where there's a lot of hearsay, if you will, about there are ghosts there. But I was having, again, a little bit more trouble finding the details. So some of the things that go on there, there's a man in colonial dress, and he kind of hangs out by the fireplace. So he is believed to be a gentleman who died on the second floor of the tavern in the 1720s. Nobody knew who he was. Nobody knows how he died. He just woke up dead one morning. So people thought that, I know, right? people thought maybe it was smallpox because that was a real issue in the States at that time. Well, I guess in the colonies at that time. So the owner, or at least the managing partner in the tavern at that time was a woman, and she had, this Native American, worker who worked with her. And so because people were so concerned that he might have died of smallpox and they were the ones that found him and cleaned up his room, they were sent to Coasters Island to quarantine in case they had the smallpox. Well, they became infected with smallpox on the island. And while the owner, managing partner, she recovered and returned to the inn, the Native American worker sadly did not and died out on the island. So that unknown guy, he just shows up and kind of hangs around. One of the reports that I did see was actually by a 7-year-old boy who had gone to the White Horse Tavern for dinner with his parents. And he's, you know, got to go to the bathroom. So the bathroom's on the second floor, and he gets up from the table and, you know, goes up to use the bathroom. And he said that when he came out, he got all kind of confused about where he was trying to get to. And he walked into this big room up on the second floor and was like, oh, this isn't it. So he turns around. And as he turns around, here's the man in the colonial dress just kind of standing there. And so the man kind of like leads him off one way, and the boy's like, well, that's kind of weird. I don't think I'm supposed to go that way. So he turned to go a different way. He's trying to find the stairs to get back downstairs, and the man disappears. And so the boy finds the stairs, and there's the man again standing at the stairs. And he's like, well, this is, the boy's like, well, this is weird. And he goes down, and his parents are like, what the heck took you so long? And so he starts telling them what happened, and the parents get a little upset about like, who is this man following our son around? And the staff is like, oh, That's our ghost. Your son saw our ghost.
Ba-da-da.
I know, right? Like that, as a 7-year-old, like, I don't know if I would find that completely intriguing or completely horrifying.
Or both. Right?
Or both. So there is another woman who, just nobody knows who this one is. She wanders around the inn, will like float through the dining room above the tables. Sometimes she walks between the tables. But when she gets to any of the fireplaces in the inn, she just like disappears. So she's like always kind of headed for the fireplaces, but not always the same ones. And she just poof, gone. And so she has apparently been captured in a photograph floating above a table. I was unable to find this photograph, but if any of our listeners can find it, I would love to see this picture. There's also a ghost who is a little girl. People will say that they're going there as they're trying to go into or leave the bathroom. They just hear this little girl crying. And she's just crying and wailing. And like, so people are like walking around trying to find the crying child, but there's no child in the restaurant, in the tavern. There's, you know, like nobody's there crying. It's just this noise coming from nowhere. So that's, a little creepy. Why is there a crying little girl? And the last one is what the staff says is the guardian of the restaurant and the tavern. It's just a very benevolent spirit that comes around and will like place its hands on the staff's shoulders to just kind of like alert them if something's happening somewhere in the restaurant. So I thought that was kind of a really neat thing, if there would be a guardian of the tavern that was, you know, just keeping an extra eye out for everything and letting the different staff members know, like, hey, you need to be aware of something over here, or, you know, and so I guess that's a thing with the staff members there, that they know if the if they feel an invisible hand get set on their shoulder, they just need to walk around, check the tables, make sure that everything's going well. One of the other kind of half stories that I was able to find, there was a woman who was out on one of those Newport ghost tours. You know, like every city you go to, they have their own ghost tour. And my hope is that someday we can actually run our own ghost tour. But
I was just going to say the same thing. When are we going to do a ghost tour?
I know. Wouldn't that be fun? Probably not in 2020.
No.
We might be able to scrape something together for 2021. But it would mean we would have to go out and interact with a bunch of people.
I have to interact with people all day.
I know. Do you want to do it after work? No, you want to go home and sit on your couch and watch Netflix.
Are they
going to
yell at me?
Of course.
Or are they going to have fun?
These are people here for a ghost tour. All right. So this woman is off on her ghost tour. And so when the tour gets to the White Horse Tavern, this one particular woman refuses to enter. She's like, I'm not going in there. I'm staying right out here. I was here for dinner last night. Okay. And apparently, like, it's not a cheap night to go and have dinner at the White Horse Tavern. So she had been there, like, celebrating something with her husband, an anniversary or something. And according to her, as they sat at the table, the ghost would not leave them alone. Just kept harassing them at the table. She wouldn't give any details about exactly what the ghost was doing, what the ghost looked like, anything like that. She just said, I'm not going in there. Because we had to pack up our dinner and leave and go back and sit in our hotel room and eat it. That's a pretty intense reaction to even
see,
like the
so
next day.
So I still
day.
Would have to deal with that kind of stuff on a ghost tour.
See?
I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Got it?
I do. I mean, that's the next night. She won't even go back in there. Like, I thought that was crazy. So anyway, if you're interested in going to the White Horse Tavern in Newport, Rhode Island, it is located at 26 Marlborough Street, and I'm sure they would be very happy to have you.
All right. So yep. Listeners down in Rhode Island, go check it out. Tell us what's up. Get a picture of a ghost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Send us your picture. Send us your story about the ghost that you saw.
Yeah. Okay, so my first story comes to us from Barnstable down on the Cape, Barnstable County, where we spent a lot of time growing up. Okay, so the Barnstable House was originally constructed in Scituate, Massachusetts, circa 1713, and then was transported by barge to its current location in 1716. Cool, okay. Right?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen when they like move a house on a truck?
Yes, I have a long story about that, but I won't go into it now.
We'll get into it later. Okay. Early records indicate that the house was probably built and at very least owned by James Payne, grandfather of Robert Treat Payne, a participant in the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Cool, right?
Very.
When Payne passed away in 1728, at the age of 63, his widow, Bethia, inherited the western half of the house and one half of the land thereunder. The remainder of the property went to his other heirs. By the time of the American Revolutionary War, the house was owned by Edmund Hawes. On October 1, 1776, Hawes sold it to Alicia Doan, who paid for it in a worthless continental currency. Well, he didn't know it was worthless at the time. The sale went through. Then he finds out. What does he do?
Kills himself on the property. No, he didn't.
Kills himself on the property. Hung himself from a tree right next to the house.
Oh, okay. That seems like a really silly reaction. Well, you think just go and get your property back. You're like, take your worthless money.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
People are so dramatic sometimes.
It's very dramatic. By 1799, Dr. Savage had become the property owner. He was married in 1776 to Hope Doan, daughter of Alicia Doan. Dr. Savage was very particular in his manners, and when the stagecoach was passing by, he would ascend to a large rock and announce himself as physician and surgeon, which is grandiose.
So wait a second. So this guy, he was actually a doctor though, right?
He was actually a doctor and a surgeon, yes.
When the bus would come into town, the first thing that people coming into town would see is the doctor standing on a big rock in his front yard yelling, "I'm the doctor."
Yes.
Excellent. Well, it's important to know where to go to get medical care.
That's right. Okay, so he owned and occupied the dwelling until he died in 1831. After the passing of Dr. Savage, the house passed to Hope Savage Shaw, the daughter of Dr. Savage. Hope Savage Shaw was also the second wife of Chief Justice Lemuel Shaw, Chief Justice of the Massachusetts Supreme Judicial. Now, Beth, do you know who Hope Shaw was the stepmother-in-law to?
The stepmother-in-law?
Stepmother-in-law.
Who? What year are we talking here, just generally?
1831. I will tell you, Herman Melville, who is rumored to have written portions of Moby Dick while residing at the Barnstaple House.
Ooh.
Cool, right?
Yes.
The house was then sold by Hope Shaw and her brother in 1832 to Abner Davis. After Davis's death in 1839, the property was inherited by his wife Nancy and later by their son Adolphus, who was a ship owner. During this period, the house was occupied by Captain John Gray, who was known to be a very unfriendly man and who is still believed to occupy the house.
Ooh.
Barnstable House then became an inn and restaurant during the 1900s. There was a revolving door of owners and names, among them the 1716 house, Old Jail House, the Sign of the Blue Lantern, the Andrea Doria Inn, Captain Gray's, and ultimately, the Barnstable House.
I think that giving a place the name the Andrea Doria Inn is just asking for it to, like, burn down.
That's what I was going to say. But I know why they had to change that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
I wonder if that was before or after the accident.
I would assume before.
I would also, but you never know.
That's true. In the 1980s, the house was turned into a commercial office building, which is its present use.
Okay.
According to its website, the Barnstable House is known as the House of 11 Ghosts and is one of the most, if not the most, haunted locations on Cape Cod.
Hmm.
Now, you would think a website proclaiming this place as the House of 11 Ghosts would then tell you all 11 ghosts in the house.
You would think.
Using that website and a couple more, we were able to track down a number of the ghosts, not all 11. Okay. So the most notorious entity of the Barnstable House is Lucy. So she's a 10-year-old child. And it is said that Lucy was playing with a blue ball in the cellar, which rolled into a spring running beneath the property. Trying to retrieve her ball, she tragically drowned underneath the house. Yikes. So as I was researching this, and this actually comes up later too, I found that during this time period, people would purposely build their houses on top of springs mm-hmm. and wells, and that's how they would get the water for their like mm-hmm. whatever they needed water for.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was quite interesting because you never really see that, like these underground springs. The only time I've ever, so when I was in Paris at the catacombs, they have all the, like the underground lakes mm-hmm. and rivers you can see. That's the only time I had ever heard of it, but I guess that was like just what you did back then. I had mm-hmm. no idea.
When I was in Ireland, the big castles would often build themselves right next to a river, right? Uh-huh. And so they would pick up water from the upstream end of the river. Uh-huh. And then the river would flow along the castle, and they would actually build like the privy, the bathrooms, above uh-huh. a section of river lower than where they were picking up their water. And people would just go and like sit on like a big like outhouse toilet and like do their business right into the river, and away yes. it would go. Somebody's job was actually to clean the walls, because like it wasn't like a foot above the water either. Ew, you were like up on the second floor. It was crazy. I thought that was crazy too. Sorry.
Yucky. But,
you know, people have long wanted to have access to water for lots of reasons.
They sure have. Okay, so it's been reported that Lucy has been seen both skipping around the dining room when the property was a restaurant, while others have reported seeing her playing with a blue ball.
Hmm.
Yes. Lucy's mother, who for whatever reason goes unnamed, even though we have a full list of everyone who's owned the property, she was remembered as being hopeful that Lucy would come back because she drowned. She was gone. So she apparently still waits quietly, rocking back and forth in a rocking chair. While some reports have witnessed the chair rocking on its own in what is formerly known as the Blue Room, the New England Society of Paranormal Investigations recently recorded an EVP of a woman softly humming in the third floor attic. It's thought that perhaps Lucy migrated to the Barnstable restaurant and tavern down the road, perhaps linked to a piece of furniture or a piece of decor which was moved there after a fire had broken out in the Barnstable house. There is also a second spirit thought to have left the house in the same fire that now lives at the Beechwood Inn just east of there. Edmund Hawes was a one-time owner of the house who hanged himself after losing his entire fortune, we will remember from earlier. He hung himself by the tree, and he is still felt there. But this one isn't like people just talk about this now. Like ever since he did that, people have been saying they feel him like outside the property walking around. Now here's a crazy one. Are you ready for this one? This is my favorite one. The most famous incident took place in 1973 when a fire broke out in the middle of the night. The Barnstable Fire Department responded to the call approximately 3 a.m. and sent two fire trucks to the scene. Several firefighters, some places said several firefighters, one place said two firefighters, another place said three firefighters. We're just going to leave it at several. Several firefighters saw a woman standing in one of the upstairs windows. When they raced inside to rescue her, no woman was there. Spooky. Not just that.
Very.
Within moments, she was seen floating around the fire trucks approximately 2 feet above the snow-covered ground. She was wearing a long white dress and had long blonde hair. Witnesses attest that she had a sad expression and asked them multiple times, what did she ask them?
Where's my daughter?
Where's the Dalmatian?
Where, what? I know, like firemen usually have a Dalmatian, but...
There was no dog on the property.
I didn't expect that.
No dog on the property. No dog in the house. The woman vanished. Mediums who said they contacted the ghost claim her name is Martha. However, there is absolutely no historical records there to validate that name. The only possibility for someone being named Martha being there would have been if she was a guest there during the days it wasn't in. So I thought that was interesting. Captain Graves was another sea captain to reside in the Barstool House. The cause of his death is unknown, but there have been reports of his presence in the cellar where he is known to slam doors, thus giving him the nickname the Door Slammer.
That's a very catchy nickname.
I read it in a few places. I don't know. So one spontaneous... Oh, yeah. This is another weird fire that happened here. So this is a separate fire from the one we just saw. It was a spontaneous fire that just showed up downstairs in the fireplace. No one lit it. It just all of a sudden they were there and a fire started. Thank God it happened in the fireplace. And it extinguished itself on its own. Now, here's the weird thing about that. Its starting and stopping went in conjunction with a group of students upstairs making a ton of noise. So these kids start like making like a lot of obnoxious noise and this fire just like boop, breaks out. And as they quiet down, the fire just gets itself out. Candle chandeliers have also suddenly lit themselves.
What? All this is crazy.
Crazy, right?
Crazy.
So a more recent one, this one's very recent, is that now that it's office buildings, there's a lawyer's office there. And he was working alone one evening. He saw a latch on the closet drop just like by itself. All of a sudden the closet latch, bam, hits it down. And then the very next day, he saw a woman in a long dress enter that same room carrying a hatchet and then just disappear. And then he separately
And then he gave his landlord notice that he would be leaving early.
I do not believe he is still there. Because then he came across the spirit of a woman churning butter by the fireplace down there. So apparently there's still fireplaces and there's the woman churning up some fire. So
nice.
For this, I looked up to get some of this information, the Cape Cod Times, occultworld.com, the Barnesville House website, and then I found another website, which I had never looked at before, and it's gothichorrorstories.com. And this is actually a really good website. I was very impressed. And the guy who runs it lives on Cape Cod.
Okay.
But there, cool. he has stories from all over the world. It was a great website. I was really happy. I can't believe I never had come across it before, but it was quite interesting. And that is the story of the Barnstable House in Barnstable, Cape Cod.
Wow.
AKA Barnstable, Massachusetts.
Yeah. That's crazy. They have so many ghosts. They got there in all these different ways. And so did you have a woman in white in your story?
Yeah. One could say the woman asking where her Dalmatian was a woman in white.
Yeah. So I think that could be a fun thing that we could start tracking in all these stories, all of the like unknown or unidentified women in white. Cause yes. I'm going to have one later today too.
All right.
So, yeah. The people that aren't identified necessarily as the woman in white, but happen to be just women wearing white. All right. So here we go on our trip north, and we are going to go up to Lake Winnipesaukee in New Hampshire.
Mm.
You probably haven't, but for any of my, my listener friends who like silly movies as much as me, have you seen What About Bob with Bill Murray?
I have seen that.
So in Lake Winnipesaukee is the lake that they're at.
Oh, nice.
Where they have that big house and everything. And so there's a big castle, believe it or not, up at Lake Winnipesaukee. It's in Guilford, New Hampshire, and it's called Kimball Castle. So it was built in, they started it in 1897, and it was completed in 1899. It was built by railroad president Benjamin Kimball, and it was his summer estate. And it cost somewhere in the neighborhood of $50,000 to build in the 1890s, which I'm sure is like a bazillion dollars today. He lived there until his death in 1920, when it was taken over by his daughter-in-law, Charlotte, and she lived there until 1960. After 1960, it was really just caretakers that stayed there. She had left a will and a trust fund that had established she wanted this land to be used as a nature preserve after her death. And
nice.
Yeah. But so she had left these million, like $100 million in this trust for this purpose so that this land could be kept up and allowed to maintain. It's like a 300-acre area. And so that money mysteriously vanished. Like over the next couple of years, it just like poof, nobody seems to know where it went. And so in the 1960s, like the caretaker who had lived there with Charlotte, he was still living there and keeping the property up. But when he died, it really started to like fall apart and go into shambles. And so he used to chase kids when they would like break into the house and come onto the property. He had a shotgun that he would fill with rock salt. And he would, you know, just fire off the shotgun. So nobody was getting hurt or anything, but it was his way of keeping the kids off of there. But unfortunately, when he died, it really became a hangout for teenagers to go up there and drink and vandalize the property. So in the 60s and 70s, vandals broke in and they stole everything. They took the dishes. They took the tapestries. They took the banister. They took the gargoyles, like, off the outside of the building. Like, it just, like, crazy things to
What are they going to do with the banister?
I don't know, burn it for a fire? It was open.
I mean, you can sell that other stuff.
Well, but, again, like, so they're just, you know, having a good old time out there. So, the caretaker reported this, and then there have been a few people in and out of there since the 1960s. But basically, the story of this place is that no one's really lived in the house since Charlotte died in 1960. It's been featured on Ghost Hunters on the Sci-Fi Channel in 2009. It was investigated by the Atlantic Paranormal Society. And what people have found there is that there are full body apparitions of both Benjamin and Charlotte Kimball walking around the property. Different caretakers over the years have heard loud noises, lights in vacant rooms. I mean, there's no electricity at the property or anything. So when lights come on, like, that's kind of a big deal. There were clocks there at one point that hadn't worked for years and then just mysteriously started working again one day. There'll be cold spots. They hear horse noises in the barn, horses like kicking the stable doors, just basic horse neighing. There haven't been horses there in years and years. Doors will randomly open and close. Items that were visible a second ago just vanish. Books fall. Plants get knocked over. It's another one of those general kind of nuisance hauntings going on. Most recently, Kimball Castle has been sold to the Starkeys, and they are converting it into a castle wedding and event center. So they're planning to take down a lot of the old pieces of the castle that's there, that while it's in like pretty shady shape inside, it's actually in pretty good castle condition on the outside, and it has a lot of really unique features to it. Like, it has this huge octagonal window in the ceiling, almost like a skylight in like the front foyer as you come in. It's looking at the pictures of it online, it looks like it has a lot of potential to be a really amazing space. The state of New Hampshire took it over in 1981, and they had to go through a whole lot of court proceedings to basically have her will vacated so that they could so they could split the property. And what's happened is that they split off the castle and a few of the outbuildings itself into a small parcel of land that sold most recently for close to $1 million. And the idea is they're going to keep those funds from the sale in order to preserve the nature preserve and keep that as an area that people can go and enjoy. So if Wonderful. You want to visit the Kimball Castle, I am very sad to say that it is private property. You are not permitted to go on the property. It's actually marked off as condemned. And there's a clause in the purchase agreement that it has to remain fenced and off limits until it is raised by whoever the new owners are. So it's a neat sort of story. I bet it would be a really fun place to go and check out. But unfortunately, we have to do it by helicopter, I guess.
How do we get to the nature preserve?
Well, it's in Guilford, New Hampshire. So you just head up 93. It's up by Laconia, if you're familiar with Laconia. If somebody you know has a motorcycle, you can sit on the back of it. You'll look perfectly in place in Laconia, and you'll maybe you have a motorcycle and you just want to ride up there, but you'll be pretty close. It's not too far from Laconia.
Good story. Good
yeah,
story.
I feel Good like story. My stories are really lacking today.
No, they're great. Okay, so for my next story, I will whisk you away to beautiful, sunny Martha's Vineyard.
Aw.
Do you often go to Martha's Vineyard?
I have not been to Martha's Vineyard probably since my older son was like 10 or 11 and he had a hockey thing out there one winter. I don't know that I've ever been to Martha's Vineyard in the summer.
I haven't been since college. It's very expensive.
Yes.
Okay. So, the Edwin DeVries Vanderhoop Homestead.
Ooh, there's a lot of words.
It is a historic house located at 35 South Aquinnah, Massachusetts. I think I'm saying that right. A-Q-I-N-N-A-H. Aquinnah?
Aquinnah. Aquinnah. Sure.
Who knows? Probably not a lot of people because only 311 people live in that town. So that's on Martha's Vineyard. In the 1890s, the house was first built by a member of the Vanderhoop family, which is a prominent family in the local town politics of Aquinnah and in the tribal organization of the Wampanoag tribe of Gay Head. The Martha's Vineyard Land Bank, which preserved the land around it and the town of Aquinnah, has made this place an exemplar of what truly historic house actually should be. Mm. Not an old house by New England standards, and it's unclear exactly when the house was totally finished, because different parts of it were moved around over time, so no one's really totally sure, but the first owner was this guy, Edwin DeVries Vanderhoop, who was the son of William Adrian Vanderhoop and his wife, Belua Ucouch Salisbury. I like Ucouch. O-O-C-O-U-C-H. Edwin?
These are some amazingly New England names.
They are amazingly New England, but that is why it is so surprising that they, I mean, please forgive my ignorance as to what I'm about to say. However, they're part of the Wampanoag tribe of Gay Head, but these sound to me like very, like, waspy names.
Yeah, I would think.
Like Vanderhoof.
They could be, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, Edwin purchased half the land from his father, who acquired it in 1890 from William Morton, to whom it had been set off in the division of Indian lands. The other part, Edwin received in a set-off. Edwin had served in the Navy and in the Civil War on the battleship Mohawka. Then, he spent a few years as a whaler out of New Bedford. Later, he attended Wayland Seminary in Washington, D.C., a school for future black ministers and teachers, which eventually became the Virginia Union Seminary. Edwin then traveled to Pine Bluff, Arkansas to teach, probably at the Branch Normal School, a college created by the Morrill Act of 1862, and which is now at the Pine Bluff branch of the University of Arkansas. It was at Pine Bluff that Edwin met Mary Amelia Cleggett, who was also a teacher. Mary was the daughter of William S. Cleggett, a freed black man, and his wife, Rebecca Hollingsworth. Edwin and Mary married in March of 1883 at Pine Bluff, and in 1884 had their first child. In 1885, they decided to return back to the town of Gay Head, and they became really big in the political, social, and economic life in that town. Edwin became the first Native American to represent the town at the Massachusetts General Court. Mary became Gay Head's postmaster in 1908. Girl power. By that time, the couple had seven children. So the ghost stories go back to the tragic death of their four-year-old daughter, Elizabeth E. Vanderhoop. Now, this is interesting. She died by falling into a cistern and drowned. Do you know what a cistern is?
Cistern has something to do with the water.
Yes, which I did not know. I wrote interesting note in all caps. That a cistern is an underground reservoir for storing water, which I thought was kind of similar to Lucy in our tale before.
Mm-hmm.
We have two daughters drowning in these things. I mean, it was a very dangerous time to be alive.
So, in December 21st, 1928, Vineyard Gazette reported the incident in detail. The splash of the child in the cistern first attracted attention of Mrs. Vanderhoof, who dropped a rope into the cistern, which was grasped by the child. The child was apparently dazed, having probably struck the side of the cistern in the fall, and could do little to help herself. She rapidly became exhausted and sick. The report went on to say that the Coast Guardsmen made a valiant effort to recover and try to revive the child. So, now here's the haunted part. Screaming of the young girl is said to be heard around the property. So people drive by, they hear it. People go in, they claim to hear it. Now it's a preserved house, so you can go in, you can get tours, you can learn about history. People all claim to hear it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone claims this place is haunted except the Vanderbilt family themselves, who claim it is absolutely not haunted. The whole thing has been made up. And it really harms the property, and it harms their family to have these rumors being spread, and they don't like it. So I do want to say that they are adamant that it is not haunted at all. However, everyone else has. You might be saying, well, maybe the Vanderhoofs just don't believe in ghosts, right?
Maybe.
So I found a ghost story that Buddy Vanderhoof says happened to him, and I'm going to tell it because it's a ghost on a boat story. I thought you'd like it. Yeah.
So, can I just stop you? Can you tap on your microphone real quick? Your microphone's not on.
I can hear it.
Was it like that different that I should redo everything or?
No, it just, as you moved back away, I was like, I can't like hear you.
Oh, okay.
So just have to turn it up.
Okay. So over 30 years ago, Buddy Vanderhoof was transporting Native American remains back to Martha's Vineyard on his boat. Quote, I was coming back from New Bedford in my boat. I was the repatriation agent for the tribe, and I was called to pick up the remains of a mother and her two infant children that had been in the Peabody Museum for decades. It was really foggy, and as I was leaving the harbor, I was going 30 miles per hour. Something came over me, beckoning me to slow down. I had no radar. Just as I slowed down, the bow of the ship was 40 feet above me. Had I kept going at that high speed, I would have run into the freighter.
Yikes.
There was a spirit on my boat. He believes it was a spirit of the mother and children looking out for him. Quote, they wanted to make it back to their homeland to be put to rest.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I got all that out of the Vineyard Gazette, who, the Vineyard Gazette is, their writing is spectacular. I will say, I was reading over, they write a lot about this place because there's not too much going on Martha's Vineyard. It's a very small island. But whoever is writing that stuff is very talented. I think it's just like one or two women. But they're very good writers.
Good. So, our last, is this our last story?
This is our last story.
Okay. Our last story comes from, now we are way up north, and we are all the way up in Maine. And believe it or not, we are in Bahaba, Maine.
Nice.
And some of you may know this, if you aren't from Boston, as Bar Harbor. But those of us around here, it's all one long slur of a sound together, and it sounds like Bahaba. And we are at the Ledge Lawn Inn, which was built in 1904. So this is an inn. It's actually out on the island of Bahaba, which has both an inner, it's like connected to the mainland, as well as an island attached to it. So the most famous ghost out at the Ledge Lawn Inn is a woman named Mary Margaret. So Mary Margaret was your typical young socialite in the early 1900s. She was rich, she was young, she was beautiful, and she was dumped by her fiancé just days before her wedding. So they were supposed to get, I know, right? They were supposed to get married at the Ledge Lawn Inn, and so she gets dumped. She's, of course, you know, completely incapable of dealing with all of the trouble that's going to cause her. So she goes up to her room on the third floor. Her wedding dress is apparently hanging up there, and the story goes that it just drives her over the edge. And so she, you know, does all her makeup, does her hair all nice. She puts on her wedding dress, and she uses her veil, and she ties her veil over a rafter and hangs herself with it.
Oh, sweetheart.
Yeah. So The next morning, she's found by a couple of the people who work there at the inn. And her face is obviously all like, you know, bloated and blown up, but she's smiling. She's got this big smile on her face as she's hanging there. And so her ghost regularly appears to a variety of different people in the inn. Supposedly the room that she killed herself in, when the inn was redone later, it was room 326. And guests who are lucky enough to stay in room 326, report that she, like, will float at the foot of their bed at night, or if they wake up, they'll see a ghostly veil tied to the rafters, but just sort of waving gently in the breeze. Obviously there's no veil there, and, you know, when they wake up in the morning, they're like, well, that was kind of weird. I was able to come up with two firsthand accounts of people who had encountered Mary Margaret. And so the first is Donna Gerda. She was a woman visiting from Brazil, only speaking Portuguese. So her first morning in the inn, she saw Mary Margaret on the staircase leading down to the lobby. As Donna Gerda is coming down the stairs, she stops and she's gesturing and she's waving and she's carrying on like what appears to be a conversation. The staff at the front desk had seen her on the stairs doing all this gesturing. And so when she came down, she, you know, said that she had seen this woman with this, you know, beautiful long dark hair, and she was in a wedding dress, and, you know, she was just smiling very broadly. And the staff knew immediately what had happened because they have been hearing reports of this woman for years and years and years. So even though the staff couldn't see her, they could see Donna gesturing, and they witnessed the whole event. The other kind of first person account that I have is from Mike Gallant, and he's the caretaker, or one of the caretakers, at the Ledge Lawn Inn. So they close up every October at the end of the season, and this was in October of 2000. It was really the final steps of closing down the inn for the year. And so everybody's down on the first floor, and Mike is doing like the final pass of the second floor and the third floor. So he's by himself. He goes through the second floor, turns off all the lights and closes all the doors. And then he goes up to the third floor for his last check. And this is where things start to get weird. He went into one of the rooms, did the check, turned off the light, goes to close the door. The light turns back on. He's like, what? So he goes in and he turns the light off again. And as he starts closing the door, he sees this kind of movement out of the corner of his eye, and he looks, and it's a woman in a long white wedding dress floating down the hall, going right across the corridor into room 326. And it's her full body apparition. And she apparently turned to him, like made full eye contact. Mm-hmm. And just gave him this big, huge smile. And then she just floated all the way into room 326. So he, of course, had to go and finish checking all the rooms, but that was a very upsetting closing down for him. He said no other years has that happened either.
Wow.
So that's, I mean, like, the people seeing this ghost of this woman is pretty impressive. There are a couple of other spirits that haunt the Ledge Lawn Inn. The first one is a young maid. Nobody's really sure exactly who she is. She had worked in the inn and was apparently having an affair with the owner of the inn. And so there was some argument, and she was found one morning dead at the bottom of a staircase. And the prevailing idea was that she was pushed down the stairs. The owners of the inn were very wealthy people, and so in order to hush up this whole thing, it was just squashed. And so there was no real investigation or anything. Like, she fell down the stairs and broke her neck. So that was, yeah, terrible. And so she is one of those unseen ghosts that haunts the place. She apparently just makes people feel dread and those cold spots. She has a tendency to slam doors in the middle of the night when nobody's around. She likes to argue in empty rooms. And so people think that this is her, like, continuing on the argument with the owner. And then, this one I thought was just absolutely This one really hit home, but there was a portrait of the owner and of the owner's wife, and they were in two different rooms. And so there are some mornings the guests will come down, and the portrait of the wife is fine. But the portrait of the owner, which is behind glass in a frame, the portrait has actually been turned around so that, right? You should see the face that Amelia is making at me. So the portrait is turned so that you can't see the owner's face. You just see the back of the canvas. And so they have to open it up in the morning and turn it back so that you can see the owner's face again, which I think is just nuts. So the last ghost that I have a report of that's really been found there at the inn was found during a seance. So, yeah, nobody has really, there aren't any first person reports of this young boy causing any mischief or anything, but they had a seance and he came and told them that, his parents had been friends with the owners when they owned the inn. And he had been there one day, and he had been out swimming and he drowned. Mm-hmm. And so even though he didn't live at the inn or on the property or anything, because he died there, that's just where his spirit remains. And he just hangs out there. So he just was a young kid, and that's his story.
That's terrible.
Yeah.
Good story, Beth.
Yeah, thanks. I liked that one the most.
That's good.
The Ledgelawn Inn has the distinction of being the most haunted mansion on the island. Out nice. In Bahaba.
Great.
Go ahead. Say it. You know you want to say it.
What?
Bahaba. Bahaba. I like to think that our accents don't come through that strongly most of the time. But then occasionally you get to say,
yeah.
Hard drive.
Yeah. There you go.
Bahaba. Yeah. Okay. So Amelia is much more organized than I am, and she gives her sources and her websites and such as she goes. But here, I'm just going to do all of mine at the end. I have been to onlyinyourstate.com, legendsofamerica.com, werewoofs.com, the Concord Monitor, riseupparanormal.com, fosters.com, haunts.com, which I found really interesting / creepy, and it scared me a little bit at first, because when you go to haunts.com, as you're looking at things, spiders crawl across the screen.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, except it was a little freaky at first because I'm like, get up, I thought there was spiders in my house. It was definitely not cool. I also found a book called Ghosts of Acadia by Marcus Labrizzi, Librizzi. And that's my story.
Great. So yeah, if you guys take a haunted day trip here around New England, let us know. Or what's haunted in your state or your part of the world that you guys like to vacation at? Have you had a haunted getaway? Write into the show. Let us know. ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com. So Beth, you want to hear something cool that happened?
Yes.
So remember how on our last episode, you were like, hey, did we get any new reviews? And I was like, no, are you crazy? We just recorded last night. But it was like one we got from June.
Mm-hmm.
We've gotten 2 new reviews since then.
Stop it.
In 48 hours.
Really?
Yes, but only one person left us something. But they were both 5 stars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So long as they're both 5-star reviews.
Yeah. So thank you so much to Mama Smith Pa for writing her review that says, love this podcast. Amelia and Beth have found the perfect blend of spooky stories, investigation finds, friendly banter, and interesting guests. Just found this podcast and I'm binging it right this minute. Keep up the great work. Well, thank you so much, Mama Smith Pa. We sure will. We sure will.
We sure will. I don't have anything witty to add. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
Thanks for the review, Mama and Papa Smith. What?
Yeah.
Mama Smith Pa. Thank you for the review, Mama Smith Pa. And thank you for the positive encouragement. It's always welcome.
Always welcome. Positivity. Mm. All right, Beth, you got anything else for this week?
No, I'm about tapped out for this week. We've recorded 3 episodes in the course of 3 days, and I don't have anything else new to say. Sorry.
Well, guys, we are so happy to have you with us on season 3. We hope you love it. As always, you can find us on Instagram at Ghost Hunting in New England, facebook.com/ghosthuntinginnewengland, Twitter, Ghost Hunting NE. Thank you, as always, to Aaron Schilp, who writes our music. And that is all. Send us your ghost stories at ghosthuntinginnewengland@gmail.com. And yeah, leave us a 5-star review. That would be really, really nice. Don't leave us a 1-star review. Really.
No, if you're thinking this is a 1-star review, then forget it. We don't have any sites and you shouldn't leave any reviews
anywhere.
Yeah,
don't leave any reviews. Go into the toilet. Drop your review there.
Wow. Okay, so Amelia's going to let us know what she really thinks. Check out our terribly outdated website, ghosthuntinginnewengland.com. Send us your drive-by ghostings. Send us your ghost stories. Send us your requests for things you would like us to find out more and tell you about.
Just say hey.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we love those. Just say hey. Also, I want to point out that even though Amelia has signed a lease with someone, she is still in search of those shirtless pics.
No, send she's not. Along. Don't. No shirtless pictures. It got me in trouble.
Oh, yeah, that's right. No. Send shirtless Amelia. No.
Send shirtless, shirtless Amelia. I'm going to have a hard time getting a pic of that.
Send shirtless pictures to Amelia.
At BethD, yada, 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 at gmail.com. All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back here with you again next week. Have a great time. Stay safe. And as always,
happy hunting.